here we are again. You thought you'd seen The Last of Us, but no! No such luck. We're back to torment you all with our nonsense. This here is the Juiciest Bit podcast, and we are the hosts.
I'm Mandy.
Charlie. I'm Charlie. And we're ready to talk movies and...
The way the wind blows through Nicolas Cage's sweet stringy hair.
And everything in between. So it's been a while.
It has been a while. Yes.
Oh, so what have you been doing since our last episode? Bendy, give our friends an update.
Ooh, well, I have been, I mean, there was Christmas in there.
Yes.
And work.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I've been watching movies. I saw Poor Things, which I adored.
Incredible.
I saw Lisa Frankenstein.
Oh, how was it?
It's pretty fun.
Okay.
Yeah, it's pretty. I was in a really silly mood when I saw it.
AKA high?
No.
Okay.
No, but I laughed my face off. Perfect. And just thinking about, like, I study classical Hollywood, so I've been thinking a lot about childlessness and kind of depictions of expectations around having children in classical Hollywood. So these are things I've been thinking about work-wise and thinking about fun projects to work on. What have you been doing?
Well, I have been trapped in paperwork hell in the ongoing battle to update my name and sex designation on all possible documentation. Turns out 3 years in, we're still working on it. So, and I've been drinking heavily, as one does in January in Winnipeg.
Yes, of course. Dry January is not a thing.
It's not a thing.
Yeah.
And my movie update is I've just been riding outrage ever since the announcement of the gritty new reboot of Roadhouse.
Yes.
Starring Jake Gyllenhaal.
Ooh.
As Patrick Swayze. No.
Jake Gyllenhaal as Patrick Swayze.
No. In fairness, the trailer did show me some flouncy silk shirts.
Oh, okay. That's promising.
But it's not enough.
No, of course not.
Not near enough. Also, terrible casting. Jake Gyllenhaal must continue playing psychopaths of all kinds.
Yes, yeah.
Cops, detectives, journalists.
Donnie Darko.
Donnie Darko. notable journalist Donnie Darko. And he's suited for all of those because he has dead eyes. But he is in no way suited to be a dance fighting nice guy bar manager / bouncer.
I mean, I'll believe it when I see it. That's
no, I will never believe it, even when I see it.
Very fair.
Because I refuse to see it. well. So that's been my cross to bear.
Oh.
Collectively.
You're so brave.
Thank you. So we're kicking off our return to podcasting with possibly the funnest of all movie genres.
Yes, indeed.
Heist movies.
Whew.
Love a heist. Mm-hmm. Love getting the team back together.
Yes.
Love watching a crime in progress.
Always.
What are some things that you would say define a heist movie for you?
Okay. I think the number one thing for me is a heist movie needs to have a gang of fun ne'er-do-wells putting one over on the man.
I was hoping you were going to say ne'er-do-well.
Yes,
thank
of
you.
Course. I try good. To say it at least once a day.
Would you also say hooligans are involved?
I would say there's some hooligans.
Or does hooligan imply too much chaos? And this is an organized thing.
Well, I mean, there's always one, at least one member of the gang.
There's like a wild card. Yeah.
That is more chaotic. Mm-hmm. But as long as some sort of greedy, buttoned-up white man is being, you know, annoyed, I'm happy. and you know, robbed
annoyed.
Within an inch of his life.
Annoyed with poverty.
Yeah. Annoyed by losing a couple mil. I think one of the things I love about heist movies is the idea of outsmarting the law.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, they always also kind of interrogate the idea of needing versus wanting.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually a heist is carried out because of some other bigger thing going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I also love that heists almost always involve stealing something outlandish.
Yeah.
Like
totally.
Something completely beyond the realm of common sense.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, there's no common sense in it.
No.
Even though it's presented very logically.
Yes.
As like a reasonable thing to do.
Yeah. Like the Declaration of Independence.
Are you speaking of our national treasure?
I am indeed. Like, you can't steal the Declaration of Independence.
But he did, though.
But he did. For twice. Noble purposes. Mm-hmm. Which is why he's outsmarting the man, but it's for, you know, a good cause.
Well, to prevent Sean Bean from stealing it.
Yeah.
One must do anything.
It's true.
No.
He's a rascal.
He is a rascal. Who loves gardening, apparently.
Oh, fascinating.
Yes, I know. Adorable. Okay, so I was also thinking about this, and I think one of the things I love about heist movies is how they're often, like, locked room mysteries, or, like, mystery stories in general.
Mm-hmm.
But instead of having someone come in and solve the crime after it's taken place, we're, in a sense, solving it as it happens.
Oh, I love that.
Because there's, like, that's the other thing about heist movies, is that, like, there's often a twist or two.
Mm-hmm.
So even though there's this pretense of bringing the viewer in and making them part of the heist team,
mm-hmm.
There's always something that we don't see.
Yes.
Or that we're not privy to, like an important element that rewrites the story under us.
Yes.
So it feels like it's sort of like this pretense of transparency or mm-hmm. accessibility almost. But we're still being held at arm's length.
Yeah. So instead of solving the crime after the fact, we're trying to figure out how to do
what's happening right now. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I love it.
Trying to figure out what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then other, like, heist elements are, you know, assembling the team with niche skill sets.
Totally.
Man on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a phrase, someone says, the impossible job, at least once.
Yeah.
Or the phrase, or both, or getting back at the game for one last hit.
Yes.
You know?
Yes, totally.
And then usually there's someone, like, shaking their fist in like, you know, anger.
Not in a huzzah and, kind of way.
No, not in a huzzah. Like, in a foiled again way.
Ah, yes. Okay. You know.
And it's usually said white men that's been stolen from. Or
yes, yeah.
Bamboozled in some way. Yes.
What a good word.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They're always bamboozled.
They are always bamboozled. So just thinking ahead. Con Air. Mm-hmm. I think many people would think, oh, not maybe their first choice for a heist movie.
Why not?
Exactly. This is what I would also say, which is why we're doing it, obviously.
Oh, yes, obviously. We do like to color outside the lines.
What do you hope to see in Con Air? Imagining that you've never seen it before, what do you hope to see in terms of a heist quality in this movie?
Like, if I'd never seen it before, what would I anticipate seeing? I mean, I would assume, since it involves a plane, that somebody is going to steal that plane.
Oh, yeah.
I would assume there are obviously stakes involved. Delicious. I would assume steaks. That the law is they're doing a switch 'em up where the law is the bad guy and the plane thieves are the good guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I would assume that everybody kind of has their niche skill to bring to the heist. Does that actually happen in the film?
Wait and see.
Mm-hmm.
We'll discuss it later. No one knows.
There's really no way to know.
There's no way we can spoil this, what, like, 30-year-old movie? That is, I think, streaming on literally all of the platforms.
Probably.
Right now. Like, I feel like it's as close to the public domain as it can be.
Yeah. It's like early access public domain.
Yeah.
They're like, the world needs this movie.
Yeah, that's right. Jerry Bruckheimer, or whoever it was like, no, I don't need to profit off of this. The world needs it, and it belongs to the world.
It belongs to the world. Greed doesn't own me.
This once.
This once.
But I will take all the profits from The Rock. A basically identical movie.
A basically identical.
With an identical score.
Yeah.
Oh, there were so many times that I was listening to this time being like, that's a music cue from The Rock for sure. Just copy and pasted it over.
I mean, why not?
If it works once,
yeah,
it works infinite times.
That's the rule.
For sure. That's how it works.
That's what they say.
In filmmaking. All right. Now's the time that you've missed, I'm sure.
Oh.
Of describing a movie in 4 keywords or less.
Okay, I'm prepared.
All right, tell me.
So, hair.
Yeah.
Because it's so gross. Bunnies.
Oh. Also gross.
Also gross, and also used as a way to make Nick Cage look innocent, which I think is funny.
Mm-hmm.
Explosions.
Mm-hmm.
And Hummingbird.
Oh.
Which is his pet name for his wife that it just makes me cringe all over.
It, like, makes my butt pucker.
Yeah.
Like, every single time.
Yeah, it's not good.
It's not good.
No. But those are my four.
Okay. So, mine are entirely all about Nicolas Cage.
Oh, perfect.
Arms, chest, hair, and pecs.
Perfect. Yeah, he does really wear that wife beater.
Oh, he wears the heck out of it.
As though he abhors sleeves. Yeah.
Oh, and I'm sure he does. Did you see those arms?
I did.
Did you see them?
I did see them.
Did you see him haul himself up single-handedly a fire engine's ladder thingy up to the roof?
Yeah.
He just hauls himself up.
Well, because he did all of those pull-ups in jail.
Yeah.
So that's why you do that.
He never skipped arm day in jail.
No.
Yeah.
The only person with
he's an absolute
better
unit.
prison built arms is Sarah Connor.
Oh.
In Terminator 2. Nobody can beat her.
You got me. Yeah, no. She is the hottest.
Linda
and
Hamilton
the only.
Can get it.
She can get it. And this is a straight person speaking.
Yeah.
Mandy.
That's
is,
right.
Like, even Linda Hamilton can turn even straight people.
The power of Linda Hamilton.
The power
compels me.
Of Lemon. Yes, her arms. Oh my god, did you see the newest movie where she's like a grizzled old lesbian?
Obviously.
Rather than being a young, hot lesbian.
It is the fate of all young, hot lesbians.
Oh man, she's incredible.
She is. Yeah.
Like, I mean, in a movie full of very good arms, Mackenzie Davis. Yeah. Put Mackenzie Davis to bed for now.
You'd like that one.
I would like All right. May I do a summary?
Please. At long last.
We got derailed a little bit, mostly by me. But we're back on track. All right. So, Con Air. First thing this movie does is show us battle stuff. Soldier boys doing soldier things. And even though I've seen this movie so much, each time I forget about this opening sequence and I get really confused thinking I've mixed up my DVD boxes again. Speaking of which, remember the time that we snuck into a movie theater and watched the wrong movie for a bit?
I remember the time we watched the wrong play.
We were also... Oh, yes, that's right. We did, too.
Did we also watch the wrong movie?
I think we... No, they were playing the wrong movie, and they had to pivot.
Yes. I do remember
but
that.
But we sat and watched it for almost half an hour. Until we were like, I think something wrong is happening.
Yes. And then more recently, we sat at the wrong play in the front
for
row.
The entire
and could
play,
not leave.
Because we couldn't leave. And it was a very small theater.
Yeah.
So it will have looked terrible if we
it
just would have up and left.
Very rude.
But it wasn't a good play. So.
Anyways.
But really what this movie wants to remind us is that war exists and that soldiers are good guys who deserve medals.
Mm-hmm.
And the most deserving of medals is a ranger named, not Aragorn, son of Arathorn, but Cameron Poe, a.k.a. Nicolas Cage. Cut to an Alabama bar where a blonde woman is waitressing creeps. Cameron Poe walks in and asks the blonde lady, "How's my baby?"
Very good.
Thank you. And again, I'm like, oh, he's talking to her. But no, he's asking her about her pregnant belly. But let's pause. Nicolas Cage's accent. What ratio of words could you understand from him? Or was it all just figuring out based on context?
It's very, very mealy-mouthed. Very...
Yeah.
I think a lot of it, I was just like, it's like, okay, he is showing affection now.
Mm.
Or he is upset like, now. But, yeah, it's very, I don't know that he's actually been to Alabama.
Yeah, especially not at this point.
No.
Yeah.
So it was a, you know, A for effort.
It mostly sounded like he had, like, taken, like, a shot of, like, mouth numbing. Like,
yes.
Like he'd been yes. to the dentist earlier.
Yep.
And it still hadn't worn off, and so he was like, I'm gonna soldier through anyway.
Yeah.
And then somehow kept going to the dentist.
It's like...
Before they shot every scene.
Yes.
Okay, so Alabama bar creeps hate that the blonde lady is married to an American hero, and is cooking up another potential American hero in her belly. Turns out, no. Baby is a girl.
Girls can't be heroes.
Everyone knows this. They can't be American heroes.
Oh, yeah, true.
So bar creeps get rowdy and start threatening Poe, and then they all end up fighting in the mud and rain outside the bar, using mostly their bare hands, but also one switchblade, even though, my movie pet peeve, they use it all wrong. No one knows how to use a switchblade
in these movies. They use it overhand.
Yeah, they do. Also, they open it up before they stab. So they're like, oh. Like, hee-hee, look at this blade. And then, doing, doing, doing.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, being like, ha-ha, sneaky blade in your gut.
Yeah. Yeah. It's all about the sneakiness.
It's all about the sneaky, like, what? Like, just carry around a butcher knife if you're gonna just show, like, come on.
You don't go waving it about.
You don't go waving no. around.
Here is my knife that I have. Behold. Yeah.
You thought it was a key ring, but it's actually a knife. But Poe is a ranger, so he punches a guy to death and then yells for his wife in a tone that sounds more like he needs her to bring him a napkin after he got some rib sauce on his pants. rather than, like, he just fully murdered a dude and maybe needs a lawyer. Make that definitely needs a lawyer, just not the one he's given.
Yeah.
In court, Poe's lawyer advises him to plead guilty to murder, even though Poe doesn't want to, in hopes that he'll get a lighter sentence. But that's because the lawyer has forgotten that Poe is a deadly weapon and a possible menace to society because of his soldiering experience.
Slipped his mind.
Slipped his mind. You'd think it would have come up, but who knows? I'm no lawyer. So the judge knows all this and gives him maximum time. And this is presented as an outrageous thing. That Poe should be a deadly weapon, but, like, honestly, yes, if you have even the bare minimum tactical training,
mm-hmm.
you should have mandated anger management and conflict de-escalation training. That's literally just common sense.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, everyone should have those things anyways, not the tactical training, the other two.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
But especially then. Cue Poe in jail, growing a mullet, and staying ripped by doing yoga when he's not writing letters to his wife and baby. While the opening credits roll, we're getting shit done. All that happened in the first set.
It just moves right along. It
moves right along. Not yeah. since The Fugitive has more been accomplished before the opening credits.
That's a huge compliment.
I mean, it is the perfect movie, Fugitive. But for real, it's like, I was thinking, it's wild to have the simplest premise. So there's, like, a prison plane, and shit goes down en route. Mm-hmm. But first, let's look at our hero's war record, and attend his commendation ceremony, and then his family reunion, and then his bar fight, and then his trial, and then his 10-year prison sentence. All to preface for getting to a plane full of conflicts.
It's a lot of exposition here.
It's a lot. We really need backstory is what the thing is.
Yes,
we just,
yeah.
like, can't know that someone gets on a plane for any reason at all.
It's true.
Yeah. So, when Poe is paroled, he's put on a prison transport plane with a bunch of the worst criminals. I think at some point someone says something like, pure predators, every yeah. one of them. And I just imagined, like, a bunch of crocodiles.
Yep.
He's going home, but everyone else is getting taken to a new super max facility. And this is our assemble a team moment. There's Billy Bedlam, who's like a super murderer misogynist. There's Cyrus the Virus, who is a criminal mastermind and also lawyer. And Diamond Dog, who is just like living while black. Like,
And he blew up something for the NRA, or he blew up the NRA.
Oh, yeah, he blew up the NRA on one single NRA meeting
yeah,
and was like, this was white supremacy, and it's like, yeah, doy.
Yeah, I agree.
And then he's writing a book about it, and everyone's like, oh, the worst. So, like, you know, you blow up a few white supremacists, and then you write a memoir in jail. And that's treated as, like, the same thing as murdering your girlfriend and her entire family.
Yeah. Yeah, I have a lot to say about that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We'll get to it. There's also Pinball, who is just Dave Chappelle being the worst person on the planet. Danny Trejo plays a serial rapist. Like, it's really astonishing that in a plane full of people, including a serial rapist, you're like, Dave Chappelle, though.
I really hope that guy gets
it. I really hope he gets it. And then there's Steve Buscemi playing a Hannibal-type weirdo.
Yep.
And then also on the plane is Poe's prison buddy, Baby O, who is along for the ride for reasons I'm unclear on, because he's not getting paroled, but he's also not going to the super max with the other creeps.
Right.
So, I don't know.
No idea.
Just like a joyride, or I don't know.
He's field there trip? So that Cameron can save him.
That's right. That's right. So he is also, like, another black man who is essentially the good black man.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, his role is to be saved. Anyways, well, more on that
more
later.
More on that later. Yes.
And then there's also an undercover DEA agent who has snuck on with a gun, even though he's not supposed to. Don't worry about him. He'll be gone very soon.
He's not a very good DEA.
I mean,
it's relative.
This begs the question. Yes. After liftoff, the convicts waste no time in hijacking the plane, murdering a bunch of guards, other inmate passengers, one of the pilots, and the DEA agent. Really. He's here and gone in a moment. Around this time, Poe gets points with Cyrus by being chill in the middle of chaos and accidentally becomes a double agent, kinda. Mostly by, like, pretending to be on the side of convicts and just, like, going along with Cyrus while also trying to communicate with feds on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
The plane has a brief stopover in Carson City, doing a sneaky trade of convicts and transponders, all to divert the feds, while Poe works to undermine them. When the DA ends up chasing a sightseeing plane because the transponder got pushed on that one instead of staying on the original plane, Poe throws Pinball's corpse, good riddance, out of the plane with a message on it that directs Agent Larkin, John Cusack, wearing a nifty socks and sandals number, and a David Byrne suit, to an abandoned airfield where the convicts plan to swap out planes or refuel? I can't remember what actually happened because there were so many
planes with some drug dealers, I think. Or
was it?
I think so.
Because there were also, like, several double-crossing things happening.
Yeah.
So I wasn't sure what the actual original plan was because they kept being like, haha, this is my other plan. My backup plan.
Yeah. It's not super clear.
Yeah.
There are many plot holes in this movie.
Whoever said honesty among thieves was way wrong. There ends up being a major battle, and it looks like an actual, like, war zone in this airfield between the convicts and law enforcement officers. And then the convicts just, like, get back on their plane and fly it to Las Vegas, where they then crash on the strip because they've run out of gas. And most of them are rearrested. Actually, like, do any of them die in the crash?
I think some of them die in the crash.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, some of them are rearrested and then...
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Cyrus and Diamond Dog and Swamp Thing try to escape on a fire truck. And then Poe and Larkin get on matching motorcycles. To chase them down. And it all ends when Cyrus dies horribly by having his head crushed by a rock crusher for some reason.
because it was there.
It was there in downtown Las Vegas hanging out where people can easily stumble and stick their heads in them.
Yep. Yeah.
Poe is then reunited with his family, seeing his daughter for the first time in her life, and then, like, tries to force a disgusting stuffed bunny on her. And this rabbit has been through hell and back, and was literally just fished out of a Las Vegas sewer.
Yeah, it's so, seen, like, some things.
Yeah, don't give that to a child. It has many diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Final scene. The Steve Buscemi Hannibal dude is in a casino, being a rascal and winning big. Roll credits.
And we're rooting for him. Let's be honest.
I mean, it's such a... Yeah, like, he is such a minor role in this entire movie that to, like, end on him being sort of the winner.
Yeah.
Is such an odd choice.
But it's so he's given a lot of odd screen time considering he has barely any lines.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he has a whole scene with a little girl who's somehow having tea in an empty swimming pool.
Okay. I have a theory about that little girl.
Okay.
That little girl's a psychopath.
Yeah.
That little girl is there to entrap convicts who are there doing a layover in order to escape.
So that, because she gets him singing, he's got the whole world in his hands,
mm-hmm.
having tea, and then she disappears, and we're meant to think he's murdered her because he's Garland Green, who wears a Hannibal mask.
Yeah.
And is, you know, tied up crazy-like.
And knows psychology.
And knows psychology. But at the end, like, she's pointing up.
Yeah.
So she's fine, and he just had a nice little cup of tea in an empty swimming pool and sang a church song
and then went on his way. Yeah.
Like, none of the other inmates get such attention.
But, right, yeah. They don't get a side quest.
No.
Yeah.
But I love that he gets that one and the last shot.
And the final shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, perhaps he is the one. He is the hero all along. Maybe this is his journey. And the whole, like, Poe story is merely to distract us from what's really happening.
Maybe. Well, I think it leads to a discussion of justice in a way, too. Just given how everyone is framed on the plane, it's very much in the vein of good guys and bad guys, right? Like, there are... I don't think this film is trying to say anything.
A bold stance coming from... Okay.
But it ends up maybe inadvertently talking about justice and the nature of like, prisoners versus cops. Because it also... So it presents us Larkin, mm-hmm. John Cusack's character, and Cole Meany's character, who is also a cop.
He's the district attorney.
He's the district attorney, and he's the worst person imaginable.
Yeah.
Like, he treats the prisoners like animals. He mm-hmm. says they're animals.
Mm-hmm.
And we actively dislike him. We mm-hmm. cheer when his Corvette gets messed up. And we kind of see Larkin as the good cop
mm-hmm.
and him as the bad authority figure, bad cop.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think the same can be said for the prisoners. We see Cyrus as sort of the horrible mastermind,
mm-hmm.
Kind of flanked by Billy
Bedlam.
And we see everybody sort of afraid of Steve Buscemi's character.
Oh, Garland.
Garland Green. But he doesn't really do anything except, like, he says things every once in a while that are sort of mildly philosophical.
Mm-hmm.
But if he's left alone, he just sort of, like...
He's just sort of sitting off by himself. Now, he is singing. He's got the whole world in his hands while the plane is literally crashing.
It's true.
Which is, at the very least, deeply unsettling.
I'm not saying he's totally sane. But what I'm saying is he is not necessarily doing crimes because he's evil.
Mm.
Right? Like, we don't know what he's done exactly. We know the lore surrounding him.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't... As far as the guys on the plane go, he's definitely not the worst.
Oh, no. In fact, it seems like... Yeah, he's kind of been, like, over, like, his legacy is overinflated. Like,
we don't,
there's nothing to sort of, like, verify or prove that he's, like he's not behaving in a way that would make it.
No.
So, unlike Billy Bedlam, who is clearly just, like, a raging homicidal maniac all the time.
Totally. And Cyrus,
And
too.
Cyrus, who's, like, a control freak at the very least, and also, like, you know...
has
some issues.
But I think, like, in showing the scene of Garland Green having tea with this little girl, I think giving him the last shot of the movie is, like, the movie kind of saying, see, it's because he didn't kill the little girl. He gets the justice of being able to run away from the system. Like, he's not going to Supermax. That's his, you know?
Super Supermax.
Super Supermax.
Mm-hmm.
because it's, oh yeah, this movie has so much about, yeah, the good criminals versus the bad criminals, mm-hmm. the good authority figures versus the bad authority figures,
mm-hmm.
And just the sense of justice,
mm-hmm.
like Cameron's sense of justice,
mm-hmm.
is, it trumps his sense of wanting to go home and be with his wife and kid.
Yeah.
It's the thing that puts him in jail in the first place, mm-hmm. trying to defend his wife, even though she's telling him to back off and let's just go home. Like, he must defend her honor.
Yeah.
And that's what puts him in prison.
That is so interesting, because I had a very different view.
Mm.
Let me tell you.
Please do.
And it all starts when Poe walks into the bar for the first time and sees his wife. And the rowdies start hassling him. And it feels like he is like a fish out of water, and he only had a place in the army.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's now coming back, and he's like thinking he's going to get respected because he's like a decorated hero who's done all this stuff. And instead, he's like immediately riled by the first like numpty who approaches him.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife is like, oh, I really hoped that, like, you know, being a soldier, being in the army, seeing actual conflict, that would have, like, taught you to, like, you know, not get so angry at the least provocation.
Mm-hmm.
And instead he, like, goes out and murders a guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And then kind of the same, like, and then, like, prison sort of does the same similar thing that, like, the army was supposed to, where it's like treating him to like be, you know, more self-regulated. He's doing all this yoga, he's doing all this contemplation, and yet like, and sort of like finds sort of like his own place. So then I was thinking, all so like, you know, the army and then prison, obviously, like, this is fucked up, but, like, they have served their purpose in sort of, like, making this dude who's, like, super unregulated in his normal life, like, sort of, like, forced to be regulated in certain ways. And then being on the plane is, and there's, like, there's also this, like, throwaway line where it's, like, Larkin talking to the wife. And being like, yes, like, sometimes, like, prisoners, like, fear release. Like, they fear the return. And the wife just, like, shrugs it off and is like, oh, no, that could never be him.
Yeah.
But it kind of feels like a little bit, because he does, like the army, like in prison, like, when he's on the plane, he has sort of, like, a very clearly defined role, a purpose, and like, the sort of, like, good-bad dynamics are very easily defined. Like, he can be a hero in his own mind on the plane in a way that isn't really possible once he becomes, like, a regular schmuck with, like, a family and, you know, like, a 9-to-5 job and doing security or something. Like, like, the thing that comes after.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think I agree with that. I just think that in all the setup of the military and sort of justified, like, the guy he beats up is a real asshole.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, in every step, I think we're meant to see him as justified in taking this action. Like, yeah, he's a hothead, but he's a hothead because he's serving his country and protecting his wife. And on the plane, he's protecting his diabetic friend and this and the lady guard's honor.
Right.
And, like, there's always someone for him to feel, like, to give him an overinflated sense of valor, maybe. And so his sense of justice has to have him at the center.
Yes.
At all times.
Yeah. Definitely.
Which is, like,
to the exclusion of, like, literally everything else.
Yes, yeah. Including his wife and daughter.
And new daughter, who he has said he is, like, can't wait to see. And yeah. Now he's, like, endlessly deferring time to see.
Yeah, which makes me think, like, how must she feel and how must his wife feel to think, oh, he's choosing his weird, overinflated sense of justice.
He's choosing possible potentially likely death.
Yeah.
Over a nice life with me.
Because somewhat, like, an argument could be made that justice looks like being a father to your daughter who hasn't had a father.
Yeah.
You know, like, where's her justice? Where's Trisha Poe's justice?
Mm-hmm.
Like, Cameron Poe is interested in justice that, yeah, that centers him.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's annoying.
Yeah. And it, again, has, like, a very specific code that was, like, inherited from the army.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, his whole thing of, like, rangers never leave people behind. Like, I can't leave my friend behind.
Unless it's my, like, wife or daughter.
Unless it's my... Yeah, exactly. No, no, no. They say no man left behind.
Oh, okay.
That's what it yes. is. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah.
They say nothing about wives and daughters.
Yeah.
No one cares.
Ugh. And it's, like, I can't help but think, too, that the whole character of, is it Baby-O?
Mm-hmm.
His cellmate, or his prison friend, who's on the plane, it's made very clear that he's diabetic, he's suffering from this disease, he needs his medication that is being withheld from him,
mm-hmm.
and basically it's kind of set up that only Cameron can save him.
Mm-hmm.
But you're absolutely right, we don't know why he's in prison. We don't know why he's on the plane. It's really not good that his insulin is kept away from him and that, like, only has one dose, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, it makes zero sense. But Cameron has to upend everything just to try to save his friend,
mm-hmm.
who dies anyway.
We don't know that.
Well...
He is.
Oh, that's right. That's right. He's near. He's approaching death. But he's...
Okay. So let's talk about Baby-O.
Yeah. Let's talk about Baby-O.
So Baby-O is diabetic, as discussed. And he is, like, not given his insulin shot before getting on the plane. He's told he's gonna get it when he's on the plane, and then as they're about to give it to him, the, like, other convicts, like, hijack the plane. So it's this massive fight on the plane during which sort of, like, one of the things that happens is, like, all the needles are broken. So they have the insulin. They just don't have any way of getting it inside Baby-O. And then in the, like, other sort of, like, major, like, conflict, which is the airfield showdown, that's when Poe goes on this, like, massive long trek to, like, find a needle in an airfield, and eventually does, and you just see sort of, like, endless shots of everyone, like, fighting around, like, literally, like, shooting, like, what looks like bazookas at each other or yeah. something. It's nuts.
It is.
And he's just sort of, like, trying to get through this war to back to the plane with this one needle between his teeth. To give his buddy an insulin shot. And I was thinking about how, like, the overarching conflict is so, so hammy and so outrageous. But then there is also this, like, very small, like, personally devastating conflict, which is just, like, Baby-O feeling time running out. And, mm-hmm. like, there's the sense of, like, he's like, if, like, I don't get an insulin shot in the next 2 hours, I'm dead.
Yeah.
So it's interesting having these sort of, like, competing timelines happen where, you know, the convicts in general are like, oh, we've got to, like, get this happening or we're going to go back to prison or whatever. And Baby-O is like, I need this or I'm dying.
Mm-hmm.
But then it also centers, like, him as essentially, like, a helpless victim.
Yes.
Who needs white saving.
Exactly. Exactly. Which fits kind of the racial pattern of this movie, where you have, like, Billy Bedlam and Cyrus the Virus and even Garland Green and Cameron Poe as these sort of, you know, the top tier criminals, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not Poe, but those other three are sort of like the royalty of the plane.
Yeah.
But all the people of color. So Baby-O and
Pinball
Diamond
Dog
and Diamond Dog and
Danny Trejo
are all sort of these depraved, ridiculous, diseased examples of criminality, right? And they all are kind of at the mercy of whatever these white criminals who are the masterminds say. They don't get to be the masterminds. They don't get to do any of the saving or any of the ordering around. And in Danny Trejo's situation, like, even all the other prisoners despise him because he's a rapist, which is, yeah, they should despise him. But why is him being a rapist worse than, you know, somebody else murdering children or like eating people or whatever Cyrus does? So it's very coded, racially coded. And then Poe gets to be the hero of all of them because he, not only is he white, but he's in a heteronormative marriage with a child. Like, he gets to be sort of the hero.
Yeah, and he already wasn't, like he was in prison for... He refuses to see it as a murder, even to the end. So he doesn't want to, confess to the murder.
Right.
Plead guilty. In the beginning, and then even later on when Garland is like, yeah, you're no different than all these other fuckers, because you just done a murder literally like 3 seconds ago. It's when he had kills Billy Bedlam.
Yes.
And Garland's like, oh, two went down, one came up, after Poe comes back up to sit down next to them, and Poe's like, oh, that's, I'm nothing like them.
Yeah.
So even the quality of, like, different murders, there's, like, murder for good reasons and murder for bad reasons.
Yeah.
And he's the only one who gets to have good reasons.
Yeah, who gets to decide. And I think that's maybe reminds me of being so jarred. The first time I saw it, and the judge, when he's convicted, says, basically, different laws apply to you because of your training. At first I was taken aback because I was like, that's not what the law says. Like, the law's supposed to apply to everyone equally. But yeah, in thinking about it and thinking about it more, you're right. He has this tactical training. He has been in the military where, like, that's what you do. You kill people.
Yeah.
And it's not considered murder for some reason, but that's what they do. And he's applauded for it. And so, yeah, this judge is being very, I mean, he's not paying attention to the law at all. And
movie legalese. Yeah.
He would appeal that lickety split.
Immediately. Yeah.
But yeah, the fact that this judge is like, no, the law doesn't apply to you.
Yeah.
You need different
laws. You get a special law.
Yeah, it's like, well, what is even justice then? Like, are you just making it up as you go along? But, like, why not? Because Poe is.
Yeah.
Why can't everyone?
Yeah, and also interesting to think about how all of these different, like, the white criminals also have some kind of connection to the law. So they talk about how Cyrus, like, you know, went in prison. He killed a bunch of dudes. And he also got his law degree.
His Juris Doctor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Garland Green, I think at one point, also talks about, like, something to do with the law. So they're all, like, sort of have, like, one foot on both sides, where they're like, you know, I'm a criminal, but I also, like, you know, no shit, yeah. and am able to manipulate it as well on my end of things, which is, again, something not afforded to the criminals of color.
Right. It's almost a class issue. Like, these guys can somehow get education in prison.
Yeah.
And these other guys are just barbarians.
Yeah, that actually connects to another thing that I was thinking about when I was watching this. Oh, I just want to quickly say, there's another person of color in this cast of criminals who isn't even given a backstory or anything at all, and that is the indigenous criminal.
Yes.
And he is literally treated like garbage, and by even, like, the other convicts. So he's not even in on anything. He's not given agency. He is literally the person that Pinball, like, uses to, like, start the thing by, like, he's like Firestarter, literally.
Yeah.
For their uprising.
Yeah.
And it's so fucked up.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know, I've just been thinking about the way that Indigenous people are portrayed in film and how it is so, so rare, even still, and I know this is 30 years old, but like still for Indigenous folks to have any kind of interiority or agency or backstory.
Yeah.
And that's like, you know, bonkers, even in like a movie as racist as this.
Yeah.
that's like another layer still.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, the Black characters are treated really shittily, but like the Indigenous person is just like,
he barely even has lines.
He doesn't even exist. He's treated like a literal object. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, anyways,
In a similar way, because there is one more character of color that doesn't get a backstory and we know very little about, but who is sort of made ridiculous, and that's Sally Can't Dance.
Who is
clearly in a prison for men.
But even given a name.
But yeah, at least she's given a name.
Do we even know the Indigenous inmate's name?
I don't remember.
I don't think so.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah.
But I think, yeah, with Sally Can Dance, we don't know her backstory. We know that she's looking for a dress.
Mm-hmm.
We can only assume how terrible prison has been for her.
Yeah.
And she's put up, like, she ends up, like, dancing for the crowd. Like, she's the entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's worth noting as well, that she's not given any sort of personality beyond just the fact that she's trans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, although was surprised that there was very little in the way of, like, homophobia or transphobia directed towards her.
Yeah, very surprised.
Very surprised. So there are homophobic comments, obviously, throughout.
Yep.
But I could be misremembering, but I feel like they are all directed to other people and not to her.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, she's not in the movie for very long.
Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, it is surprising. But then I wonder if that's also not that I wonder if that's an indicator of her being so unimportant that people don't even refer to her.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. But, like, she's still there dancing in a sparkly purple dress.
Yeah.
Like, it's... We get the visual, the entertainment, without having to bother with
the humanity.
Politics and the humanity. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is just how we treat a lot of folks who aren't straight and cisgendered in the movies and in life.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
I will also say, So coming back to the sort of like class issue, I was also struck on this watch how often people talk down, like, it was sort of this weird exchange of like racism for class discrimination, where a white person would say something heinous to a Black person, and then a Black person would say, like, call, like, a white person white trash or
hillbilly. Yes.
And I think that also, like, happened, like, to, like, among the white people, too, as a way to sort of, like, denigrate each other. And I wasn't quite sure, like, obviously, it's very different things. But I wasn't quite sure what to do with that particular exchange of like racism versus class discrimination.
Mm.
And also, if the movie seemed to think that those were equal.
Yeah, I was gonna say, it's almost like the movie is trying to be like, we don't see color.
Yeah, well, very much, even though, yeah. Like, obviously, yeah. But it's like, haha, white people can have shitty things said to them too.
Yeah.
She's like, no, it's not the same.
No.
No. If you call someone a hillbilly, that's a silly thing.
Yeah. It's, yeah.
Also, in the case of MC Gainey, possibly quite true.
Yes.
I mean, dude literally looks like a hillbilly. Also, yes. Radiating, I hope nothing bad has, like, do you know anything bad about MC Gainey?
I don't know anything bad about MC Gainey.
Okay, because dude radiates Golden Retriever energy.
He does.
And I was like, oh, what a ray of sunshine that he MC really Gainey is.
Yep. Yeah, it's true.
But you never can tell with white men of this era.
You never can tell.
Or in general, but you know.
Like. Yeah. Yeah, the 90s were a rough time. Great time if you were a straight white man.
Great time for flinging your dick around, but, you know, terrible for the rest of us. Yeah. No. Oh, okay. One other thing that I just wanted to throw in before we move on. Mm-hmm. Ageism. People talk about John Malkovich as being old.
Oh,
at
yeah.
39! And I was like, if that dude is 39, I will eat my hat.
Yes, indeed. How is that supposed to make me feel?
He is, in fact, in no way 39.
No. Not at all.
He's 50 if he's a day.
He's actually 39 in the same way, in The Importance of Being Earnest, one of the ladies that Aunt Augusta talks about has been 39 for years.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Oh, goddamn, what a great movie.
It truly is.
What else did you like to talk about?
I just wanted to kind of tie up the class bit, by talking about, once again, Larkin and Malloy, because Malloy is very flashy in how much money he has.
So Malloy is the Malloy DA agent,
yes,
the district attorney.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Larkin is a dork who wears socks and sandals and, like, khakis, but he also...
A dweeb.
He's such a dweeb. He quotes Dostoevsky.
Yeah.
As if he is some sort of like, I'm not a regular cop. I'm a cool cop who loves prisoners. But he's basically spouting the things that black scholars have been saying for years, you know, about how prison doesn't work. And like, he's basically quoting Angela Davis at every turn without quoting Angela Davis. Mm. And he gets to be elevated for that because he's, you know, he's an educated cop. He knows how the system is flawed and he's going to fix it. But yeah, I just wanted to sort of give that shout out to,
while still being complicit, like, he's the one who's like, he's like, that's my play. Like, it's a weird thing of ownership.
Yeah, there's
too.
Still a lot of capitalism involved, but it's this virtue signaling, right? Without giving credit to, like, James Baldwin or Angela Davis or any of the folks who've actually been involved with prison abolition for decades and decades.
This is sort of what made me think that this movie sort of wants to have its cake and eat it too, where it is paying lip service to the, an awareness that, you know, prisons are maybe not great, because Larkin keeps saying things like, oh, you know, like, he's the product of this system, or, like, we made him that way, or whatever.
The system that I work for.
The system that I'm literally enforcing.
Yeah.
And, well, at the same time, the movie itself is, like, this oversized piece of entertainment.
Yes.
So it also is just, like, we're doing this little thing over here, but don't forget that you really want to see explosions and people, you know, like, just like, for the nerds who didn't check their brain at the door, but really, you like, check your brain at the door.
Yeah, similarly for all the comparisons between the military industrial complex and the prison industrial complex, which again, dates back to Angela Davis. but yeah, it's like, oh, Poe's in the military, ergo, Poe knows how to be in prison.
Yeah. Yeah.
And vice versa.
There it is.
Yep.
Hey.
Cool.
Oh, man. What a bummer. What a very fun movie.
What a very fun movie. What a very problematic and fun movie.
It does take quite a bit of, like, just, like, you know, letting go and letting God.
Yes.
Watching this movie.
Yeah. Like, if you want to enjoy yourself, just don't think too hard about it, and you will enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to be critical about a movie, well, welcome to your playground.
Yeah. There's lots to work with, for sure.
Lots and lots.
Oh, man. Shall we move on to our theme corner? Or...
Oh, sure.
Okay, very good. So, now that we've discussed this, how does this movie fit into the heist category?
Well, a plane is heisted, so there's that. And I think, too, we do have this hierarchy of gang members,
mm-hmm.
headed by Cyrus. But then ultimately Cyrus is thwarted. They're sort of... Cyrus isn't a great leader. He's no George Clooney.
Oh, boy.
But...
He's no Danny Ocean, is what
you're
saying? He's
no Danny Ocean.
Okay, all right.
But yeah, I think there's the heist of the plane, obviously. There's the heist of the bunny. There's the heist of...
Really reaching here.
Well, and I think, I mean, if you want to think about it, too, there's that the heist of Poe's time with his daughter, right? Because he's put in prison.
Her lost childhood is heisted.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of things stolen. Or
actually, I was going to say the future is a heist.
Yeah.
They're trying to reclaim their future.
Yeah.
And like taking it back from the law.
Trisha Poe's last however many years,
mm-hmm.
heisted. And even before that, because he was
all
away.
Her sexy times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's basically been like a single lady and a single mom,
mm-hmm.
for longer than she's been coupled up.
Yeah.
So.
I actually wanted to ask how she got pregnant.
Well, Charlie.
Okay. Yes.
When a mommy and a daddy,
yes.
love each other very much.
Okay. With you so far. No, you numpty. I was like, he's literally been in the army, and then it looks like he's literally just come off the boat from his deployment.
Oh. No, I know what you meant. I'm not stupid. Yeah, no, they must have just, it must not be his.
See, this is why he doesn't feel the rush to come back home. He's like, I know you,
and why
Trisha.
He gave the girl a sewer-soaked bunny.
A sewer-soaked bunny.
Here's your
Las
stupid
Vegas
bunny.
Sewer-soaked bunny.
You
yeah.
bastard.
Yeah, no good.
Yeah, that's another one of those plot holes. It's like, but wait.
There are a lot of plot holes here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no.
It's
mostly plot holes. I was also going to say how I didn't have a sense of, like, how large the plane was.
It's huge.
It must be massive.
Yeah.
Because there would be whole stretches of time where I'd be like, are we in the middle of the plane? Are we at the end of the, like, wait, where are we in space?
Yeah, it's very strange.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a case of the exterior shots presenting a much, much, much larger space than the interior shots do.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's like, where's the rest of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hiding.
Hiding.
Like Doctor Who, it's smaller on the inside.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I was going to say, also, like, in contrast to more conventional heist movies, where there's always, like, a breaking in to achieve something, and then, like, a breaking out to get away. The heist itself is the getaway.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like so the twist is the hijacking of the plane to steal it from the authorities. And, like, the legal system is the, you know, white man to be foiled in this case.
Yeah, which kind of gets back to your description of the heist, where we are in on the crime being done kind of in situ. We're not trying to solve anything. We're trying to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very, very heisty in that sense.
And using, and the use of, I kept thinking of, so I've recently seen Inside Man, so that's, very top of mind. But, like, obviously, like, a far better, like, it's a perfect heist movie, Inside Man. Everyone watch Inside Man. But even just the use of, like, switcheroos in terms of, like, making, you know, have quote-unquote good guys look like bad guys and vice versa, mm-hmm. and having those sorts of switcheroos happen, getting, you know, quote-unquote good guys, again, heavily air-quoted, arrested in place of, like, the criminals. I was also thinking, again, weird plot hole to think about, but, like, from the perspective of the heist, every conflict on the plane had to have gotten incarcerated on the gamble that they could eventually, like, get away on the plane.
Yeah.
So, like, nothing makes sense with this level of organization. Like, these dudes mm-hmm. are from different prison blocks, they're from different prison facilities, they have different crime backgrounds. Like, there is no way that they would all just happen to, like, meet each other and then, like, plot.
Yeah.
So the fact that they all come together and have this already assembled made me think that, like, oh no, they had, like, met before they went into prison. So the prison itself was part of the con.
Yeah, it's like, let's make a pact.
Yeah.
Boys. As soon as we get arrested and convicted, we're getting out of there.
Which is similar to the, like, why we have the, like, massive Poe backstory, is mm-hmm. that, like, that whole lead up is part of the con to get him on the plane.
Yeah.
So.
In a better way than Malloy's stooge,
mm-hmm.
whom Malloy arms and is therefore responsible for his own stooge's death.
Oh, yeah, of course. Not that he
thinks. Poe is like more of a sleeper agent.
Exactly, yes, that's right. Very sleepy.
Very sleepy sleeper.
Again, that dental surgery really, really did its magic. Moments of joy. Oh, what were your moments of joy?
So many. So, Nicolas Cage's accent.
Yes.
Just pure joy. Steve Buscemi. Always joy. I love when the prisoners are being loaded onto the plane and one of the officers says, gag and bag this Nazi muffin. That was a really good line. And of course, I said, put the bunny back in the box. Iconic. When there's a point when Poe is trying to get Cyrus to believe that Poe's on his side, and he's trying to convince Cyrus that, like, hey, you're in charge, and he says, Cyrus, this is your barbecue, man, and it tastes good. And it's the weirdest thing.
Which reminded me of Bring It On's
yes!
line that's like, she's
Missy's
the poo,
so take a big whiff. Totally.
Same energy.
And then when somebody says, please, Cy, and Cy responds, Anara, and
ugh.
Then kills him. It's, oh.
That was my moment of despair.
I mean, if I didn't laugh, I'd cry.
I felt that like a punch in the gut.
Yeah, it's very bad.
It's terrible.
But it's so bad, it's good?
It doesn't even work. I don't know.
No, it's very silly. What were your moments of joy?
Oh, also so many. Highlights are... So at one point, the district attorney is like, what's with Dictionary Boy over here? And Larkin's like, Thesaurus Boy would be more appropriate. And if that's not a self-own, I don't
Such
know what
a self-own.
He says it so smugly, and I'm like, dude, you're telling on yourself.
But also, yes, you're correct.
Thesaurus Boy. Similarly, when Poe and Garland are having their you know, philosophical debate about whether they're insane or murderers or whatever, Garland is like, well, you know, it depends on your definition of insane, and says something about how, like, you know, being at a cubicle for 50 years and then, you know, being at a sad retirement home afterwards waiting to die is, like, you know, could be someone's definition of insane. And then he's like, I drove across 3 states wearing someone's head as a hat.
That's right.
It's such a bizarre pivot, because he's like, yeah, you know, like, insane is just living a normal life. And he's like, but I did this. What?
Oh, I love it so much. It's so good.
Oh, so nuts. Yeah. I also really liked when Larkin and Poe are on the roof of the fire truck trying to get Swamp Thing to stop it. And at one point, Larkin takes an axe to the fire truck cab roof. And it's like a shining moment where he's like hacking away at the top. And then you see it from the interior. And Swamp Thing looks up and there's just like this little peekaboo like hole in the roof. And Larkin's like, you pull over. Also very good.
Very good.
And a last one is the pilot is one of the dudes from Men in Black. And I just love Men in Black so much. So I also was like, hello again.
Oh, that's great.
Nice to see ya. do you have any movie connections?
Yes. So I thought of Shawshank Redemption in terms of like, this is a model prisoner. He is a good man.
He is a good man.
Shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
Yeah. Of course, The Rock.
Of course, The Rock.
Especially in terms of the idea of breaking in or being an inside man when you should be an outside man. and I thought of The Great Escape too in terms of...
Oh, I was thinking of Great Escape.
Yeah, like plans and gizmos and like coming up with sort of heist to foil the man.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, what about you?
That's great. I was mostly just thinking of, like, all the connections to Inside Man, because I've seen it so recently. So, yeah, every time there'd be something that was somewhat similar, I'd be like, oh, man, I wish I was watching Inside Man right now. Shoot.
But what a plug for Inside Man.
All right. In conclusion, what did we learn? And juiciest bits, juiciest butts.
I learned that having tea in an empty swimming pool is a cool way to hang out with Steve Buscemi.
Oh, you're the child in this situation.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, singing songs.
Singing Sunday school songs. Yeah.
And playing with Ken.
That child is not well. No. They're like, there is no one around for miles.
And then parents?
Exactly.
Yeah.
What is she doing hanging out in an abandoned airfield,
first
of all?
Maybe she, too, is a
psycho killer.
She
murdered them all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But I would totally do that to hang out with Steve Buscemi. I love Steve Buscemi very much.
Yeah. No, he's great. There's even a moment where they, like, take off his, like, Hannibal mask. Mm. And it's almost erotic.
Because
they're like, whoa.
Yeah.
And it's like slow and sexy.
Undressing him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
I learned that when you throw a body out of a plane, it stays basically intact.
Yeah.
And you can write messages on it.
You can.
And they'll be still legible on the ground.
And he'll land on an impatient older man's windshield.
Don Davis's windshield,
Don
in fact.
Don Davis's windshield.
As a matter of fact. juicy butt. I mean, it's got to be Nicolas Cage, man. He's, like, so ripped in this movie.
He's very ripped. Yeah,
he worked really hard.
He did.
And he deserves credit.
It's true.
Yeah.
I think I will go with the bunny, though. Grabbing the literal
wow.
juiciest
you
butt.
You all...
Also,
take that back.
Nicolas Cage, while his arms are ripped, his butt really isn't. He has flat butt.
I mean, he's a white man. What do you
he
expect?
He has a flat white.
Yeah.
For a butt.
Flat white. That's something else.
I mean, in terms of butts. I'm referring to butts.
All right. So maybe he doesn't have a butt, but those arms deserve... You know what? Like, if you smush it all down, in terms of just, like, muscle presence...
Sure. Yes. Yes.
I'm going to give it to him anyway.
Okay.
I hate your choice.
I support you.
But you know what? We can agree to disagree.
We both agree to disagree. It's not the bunny's fault.
The bunny should accept its fate. And
the bunny that
go
was
away.
Clearly purchased in a prison commissary is just the product of fate.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, yeah. Just a cog in capitalism, like
it's
we
true.
All are.
So true.
On that note, it's been fun.
It
Let's do it again.
Fun.
I've been Charlie.
I've been Maddie.
See you later.
Bye.